And good morning, everyone, and good morning to those of you in the audience today. We're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 3616, and I will now open that public hearing, and I'll call up Mike Versotti, all right, and Andrew Bowman.
How about Representative Dingfelder?
Okay. All right. Very good.
Don't we have to do that with no objections?
Yeah, should be Jeff. Watch out.
Representative Dingfeld, my apologies. I thought you were here for another reason.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the Revenue Committee, for the record, I am Jackie Dingfelder, State Representative for House District 45, and I am the sponsor of this bill, and I thank the Chair and all of you for hearing this bill today. First, I just want to give you a very brief overview and then provide some more detail, and then I'm going to hand this off to the experts because I do need to go to my Transportation Committee this morning. But House Bill 3616 basically enacts recommendations of the Conservation Incentive Work Group for how landowners and businesses can be encouraged to voluntarily invest in the improvement of natural resources. And this bill basically does two major things. It rewrites the statutes that govern the Wildlife Habitat Conservation Management Program to improve its administration and provide local government discretion whether to participate in the program. And it also improves the stewardship agreement program by creating a framework for agencies to deliver tangible incentives to landowners with approved conservation plans. So that's sort of the major overview of what the bill does. I want to just provide you a little bit of background on how this bill came to be. And last session, for those of you who are here, you may remember that the legislature passed into law House Bill 3564, which directed the Oregon Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Forestry to review state statutes, rules, policies, and programs that affect landowner decisions to implement conservation strategies. The agencies were directed to complete this review in consultation with other relevant public entities and with an array of interested private organizations, which included farmers, ranchers, timber producers, both large and small timber producers, and conservation organizations. The bill also required the group to report its findings and recommendations to the next legislative session, and hopefully all of you have this lovely report in your hands, because this is basically from House Bill 3564. That's the outcome. So the bill before you, House Bill 3616, is the product of that collaborative effort. And in May of 2002, the Departments of Agriculture and Forestry convened the Incentive Work Group. The group developed recommendations for improvements to incentive programs that would encourage landowners and businesses to invest voluntarily in the improvement of natural resources. And that the purpose is to maintain the long-term ecological, economic, and social values that certain private lands provide to the state of Oregon. In February of this year, the work group included its recommendations in a comprehensive report to the legislature. That is before you. And as I mentioned, House Bill 3616 contains the provisions that will implement some of the work group's recommendations. Specifically, House Bill 3616 rewrites the statutes that govern the Wildlife Habitat Conservation and Management Program to improve its administration by ODF&W, county assessors, and the Department of Revenue. It provides a mechanism by which cities and counties can elect to participate in the Habitat program or opt out of the program if their participation creates an economic burden. Current law does not allow counties that are currently participating in the program to ever opt out. The bill also rewrites the statutes that govern the Stewardship Agreement Program, which is currently administered by the Department of Forestry. The bill's provision will improve the program by creating a framework for the Department of Forestry and the Department of Agriculture to deliver tangible incentives to landowners with approved conservation plans. I am pleased to report that this bill was unanimously voted out of the House Water Committee and that concerns about the bill were addressed with amendments adopted in the Water Committee that that you should have in front of you. Those amendments deleted sections of the bill that addressed the tax treatment of lands subject to conservation easements and also created the mechanism by which cities and counties can opt in and out of the Habitat program. I'm also pleased to report that we know of no opposition to the bill at this stage in the legislative process. With that said, we ask that this committee adopt the minor amendments before you today. The primary purpose of the amendments, and you should have the dash fours in front of you, the dash A4s in front of you. The primary purpose of these amendments is to provide additional peace of mind to local governments by requiring that the Fish and Wildlife Commission give significant weight to a county or a city's argument that participation in the Habitat program has created an economic burden, thus justifying the city or county opting out of the program. So again, I thank you for your consideration of House Bill 3616 and ask that you support the efforts of the Conservation Incentives Work Group and others who have worked for many, many, many months, I think it's been about 2 years, on this process to achieve conservation on private lands through means other than regulation. And I'm going to, as I mentioned, I'll be able to stay for a few minutes, but I need to get back to my committee, and these able gentlemen can answer any of your questions as well. So thank you so much for your consideration today.
Before you leave, let's just see if there are any questions for Representative Dinkfelder. Any questions? Okay. All right.
Thank you.
You very much for coming in this morning. All right. We'll continue on.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, I'm Mike Barsotti, Department of Forestry. I do our policy work for our incentive program, Forestry Assistance. This bill is significant in several ways, but the one that I think is most important is the working group that the 3564 from the last session asked to pull together was an interesting group that have never holistically worked together. I mean, from the farm community and forest community, the cities, the counties, and with the conservation groups and the land trust, was a group that all agree and believe in incentives, feel that incentives are a very effective tool, especially in this time of economic times, that incentives can be very effective in meeting society's needs from resource grounds. This group came together and developed some strong working relationships that will continue beyond this. The part that the Department of Forestry is most interested in is the stewardship agreements. We had this concept developed in statute three sessions ago and did not meet the mark, the vision of where those landowners that are willingly managing their lands are not the ones who are considered with needing to focus on with regulations. We should have some way of legitimizing that, institutionalizing that, and working with those landowners from an incentive side as a partner rather than a regulator. But this bill not only will allow us to meet that objective, but allows us to even go further into looking at land in a more holistic watershed view than just agency by agency, discipline by discipline, land use by land use. This will create a stewardship agreement program that represents all of the landowner's property, both his farm and forest land, and he'll be able to work and have one plan for the property. Most of the things we've done for the last 80 years have forced a landowner that had both farm and forest, for example, to work with different agencies with different land uses. This is an attempt to move to that better, greater understanding in a more holistic way and more in line with the way the landowners manage their property. For that reason, I hope you support this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Bowman. I'm the Private Lands Conservation Council with Defenders of Wildlife. I appreciate very much that Representative Dinkfelder was here today to explain the bill and also that Mike Barsotti was here to give further background. I believe they've pretty much covered the basics about the bill and the process. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I also know of other people in the room that work in the work group could also answer substantive questions, and I can bring them up with your permission, if there's a certain question that they could answer best. Sure. So at this point, I'd like to offer that.
All right. Thank you very much. Questions for either one of these gentlemen? Any questions?
Well, I'm not sure if this is the right panel or not to ask the question of, but I'm assuming that the bill is here because of the revenue impact that it's already been vetted by the other committee that, that heard it earlier. And if that being the case, I'd like to know more about the revenue impact and the evaluation issues and things of that sort that, that we've been talking about.
Okay, I see fall coming up, so maybe you might address the revenue impact.
Madam Chair, the changes, President Von Hart, the changes that go within the classification of the type of land and what that special assessment type of program is where the impact would occur, because the at this time, to be under special assessment, you have to go through different ways of qualifying. The way this thing started, or it have included in its goals, is how to streamline, instead of going first and getting open space designation and then having a wildlife and be into it. This kind of gives it more step by step. Now, there are a few things in the bill that are more of a carrot, I believe, for the landowners than the regulations. And this permissive type of behavior and more encouraging current type will, in a way, have made that impact on the local governments. However, and if you, you could see these things from the ability of the lands to disqualify from a certain program and then re-qualify, excuse me, and so on. And even one of the provisions that talk about the interest that would have been levied on disqualification of a land, this is on page 9, line 4, the end of line 4, that it gets frozen at a certain time instead of being due right away. However, all these, if they were just on their own, being a state-mandated type of program, would have had an impact on revenue concerning local governments. But dotted throughout the bill, you see a local government opt-out type of ability. And even in the Dash 4 amendment, I think the local governments get to have further strength in their ability to get their economic case considered. The only thing that might be left with some sort of difference is not all the three types of lands that excuse me are being discussed here, which is forest land, farmland, and then the wildlife habitat. They don't necessarily all get the same type of treatment on the way of disqualifying and re-qualifying again. So that that is still probably more of a carrot on one side than the other side.
Representative Barnhart, did you have any questions to that?
I guess I'm a little foggy about how this would work. Could you give me a hypothetical? Who's going to use this? Who would that, and how it would be put into practical use?
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Haas, members of the committee. I'll give a hypothetical example, but I think it's fairly representative of how the program would work. First of all, I want to emphasize that under the way the bill is written now, a city or county would have to petition the Fish and Wildlife Commission to have certain lands eligible for this type of assessment program. So assuming that's happened and the landowner is within an area that's been deemed suitable for this type of program, let's say you had a landowner who was currently using his land for timber production or farming, and he wanted to move some of that land into wildlife habitat conservation. By participating in this program, he could go, say, from a farm assessment or forestry assessment directly into wildlife habitat special assessment, and by doing so, not get a hit in higher property taxes or back taxes. And that's what this program is designed to do. It's rather than really create an incentive, it's to remove a disincentive. Because if this program didn't exist, if someone took part of their land and put it into wildlife habitat conservation, they would be hit with a higher property tax bill.
Madam Chair, why is that?
If
somebody took part of their land, and why would they?
Well, let's say they were farming or using it for timber production, and they were receiving a farm use or timber use special assessment, and then they no longer can meet that special assessment and the criteria for that, then they would have they'd be disqualified and face back taxes and a higher ongoing property tax bill.
But if someone wasn't in a timber or farmland lot, I mean, there's some provisions in here about location of dwellings. I mean, are those the only practical places where this would apply?
If I understand your question might be, is it only for land that's currently under special assessment that might go into this? And I think the fair answer is there might be some circumstances where someone is at market rate special or market rate assessment and go into this program. We were unable to determine how often that would happen. We don't think it would happen very often. Primarily, we're talking about lands that are already in resource zones, or unless the city designates or a county designates lands that aren't in resource zones, which I don't know how likely that is. But because they're already in resource zones, chances are they're already in that special assessment. And I do want to emphasize again, if I might, that the current bill does give the ability of cities or counties to approach the Fish and Wildlife Commission and say, it turns out this did create an economic burden for us, and we'd like to get out of the program. So there is more of a safety net in this bill than there is in the existing law if cities or counties feel like the revenue impact is there or is becoming a problem.
All right.
Madam Chair, a follow-up on that question. I'd like to follow that line of thinking out a bit. We have a special assessment land that has now gone into a habitat land, and now for whatever reason the land is disqualified. What happens, if anything, to the taxes that might have become due had the land gone out of the special assessment in some other way or for some other reason? Are they simply gone, or do they become reestablished in some way?
I see a head shaking in the back. Would one of you like to come up and address some of this? Okay. Have the Department of Revenue coming up to help us sort out this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. And I do have somebody much brighter behind me here, but the disqualification would work exactly the same. It would be a 10-year disqualification, more than likely, and taxes would be due as if they were disqualified from open space or under this program. Does that answer your question?
No.
Okay.
Because as I understood it, the value of this program is that it prevents back taxes to be due from a special assessed area if it goes into this habitat program. What happens if it becomes disqualified from the habitat program?
Oh.
What happens to the taxes that would otherwise have been due when it went into the habitat program but for this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, the back taxes are the disqualification amount becomes the difference between the amount that's due and the amounts that would have been due. So that would extend for the tax years preceding the disqualification.
Okay.
Regardless of the special assessment program. So if they transition, then it would extend for the period of time that the wildlife habitat program was in place or into the earlier special assessment program.
clear as mud.
Okay.
So far.
Let me ask Bruce Tindall to come up if that's okay with the chair.
Sure. That would just be fine. Bruce? While Bruce is coming up, I would like also at the same time for you to address the cities and counties being able to opt out, because obviously they're opting out because there's some cost. So if that cost goes away, then that plays into the same thing. It's not taxes, but it's still cost of counties and cities. Yeah, just pull a chair up, Bruce, and we'll just shift the microphones around.
Hi. Madam Chair, my name is Bruce Tindall with the Department of Revenue. And if I might try to address your question on special assessment disqualifications, if you go from any special assessment to another special assessment, the potential tax liability rolls with the special assessment. It goes with the land. So if they go into the Wildlife Habitat Program, then the same disqualification and potential additional tax follows it. So then if they're disqualified from that program, it would be the exact same calculation no matter which program they're in.
That's the kind of answer I was looking for. And then the follow-up of that is, what happens if the county or the city, whatever it is, opts out of the program?
Well, those that are currently in the special assessment would continue to stay in until they're either disqualified or remove themselves. It's not a retroactive removal of anybody in the program.
Thank you.
All right. We've been joined by Gil Riedel. Gil?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You want to make some comments on this?
The record, Gil Riedel, Association of Oregon Counties, and I think it's fair of me to speak for the League of Cities as well, because I've conferred with Willie Tiffany, and we both organizations support this bill. AOC agrees that in natural resources policy at this stage, it's more effective to provide incentives than to provide further regulations. This bill gives individual counties the opportunity to walk the talk. The individual county opt-in, opt-out provision is important for not only the local buy-in, but for something you may not have thought about, and that is we have 14 counties that are in the program now, and I believe we'd have more counties in if there were not the sort of walk the plank kind of choice they're facing. You either come in the program, or if you get into the program, you can't get out, regardless of how this eventually evolves. This bill gives flexibility for counties to go in and give it a try, and there will be, I suspect, more counties that will want to do this, knowing that they have the opportunity, if it's not working well, to petition the Fish and Wildlife Commission to step out of it, leaving the folks, the individual constituents who are participating in the program, the same process.
Right. Other questions, either of Gil about counties, or we can certainly bring Mike back up, or Andrew will be happy to answer any.
Incidentally, I don't know if it was clear, Madam Chair, but we do support the -A4 amendments and ask you to adopt those. We believe all stakeholders are in support of that, so there's no controversy with those.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. And I'm going to call Katie Fast from the Cattlemen Association.
Good morning. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We participated in the working group over the interim. We did have some oppositions to the bill in its original format, but our concerns were addressed in the Water Committee with the amendments brought forward. We are very supportive of the ability of counties to opt in and out of the current program. It gives them some flexibility and also control over the economic impacts that the Wildlife Habitat Conservation Special Assessment might bring. We are also very supportive of the addition of the Department of Agriculture to the Stewardship Agreement Program, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Katie. You're any welcome. Questions for Katie? I have a question, Katie. I don't know if
Sorry.
You can answer it. If not, I'll have someone come up and answer it. What is the public process here? Perhaps Gil is the one that needs to answer this. Let me excuse you and have Gil Riedel come up. I think it really focuses on the county. Gil, what if a county, the county commissioners think it's a good idea to go into this program, and they haven't been in one before. Is there any public process to see how many people in the county would be supportive of going into this?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that would be up to the individual county process. There would be a public process, I'm sure. Let me give you a bit of background. This concept was created by out of one of our, I would say, one of the founders is one of our more conservative county commissioners, and he was doing that wonderful all-American responding to constituents. He had constituents in farmland that who wanted to do some wetlands work and other things on their properties, and were afraid if they did that they would lose their farm use assessment and they'd have these back taxes to pay. The commissioner in Polk County, Mike Propes, thought it'd be a great idea to provide the opportunity for landowners who want to do things that make sense both for the ecosystem and the land to do that without penalty. So this is really this program is really created as a response to constituent requests. So I suspect that what will happen is if you have a county board of commissioners who hasn't thought about this, there will be constituents, if there are constituents in the county that are interested in participating, they will come to the board and ask for the county to enter into the program. Then there'd be a public process, public hearings and so on about whether that would be a good idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gil. Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions of anyone? Right.
Madam Chair, just one thing that I don't know if the Department of Fish and Wildlife, they're required by the bill to examine the designation periodically. I wasn't clear what does that mean. Is that every year, every 2 years, 3 years, and is that going to generate a lot more work for them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, who would like to tackle that one?
Yeah. It's a good thing there's somebody back there. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Gail McEwen, Land Resources Program Manager for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I'm responsible for working with the Wildlife Habitat Conservation and Management Program. We do currently have a biologist assigned to each county to work with landowners on this program, and they are required to monitor the properties in the program at periodic intervals to make sure that people are complying with the plans that they have agreed to. And we do anticipate having an adequate amount of staff to keep up with the program. We have applied for and received a federal grant that will put two additional biologists on the ground to work with landowners, one in the Deschutes Basin and one in the Willamette Valley. So we do anticipate that we will be able to provide monitoring necessary to make sure the program is being carried out.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I note that we've finally got the woman in the chair who really has the answers. Just an aside.
I'm not sure if I'm offended by that.
You think about it, Representative Williams.
Now I know I am.
I'm sorry, I'm just having fun. How many of these current projects are going on in the state? How long have we been doing this?
Well, the program began as a pilot project, in Marion County, I believe in 1993 in Marion and Polk counties. And in 1997, the program was expanded statewide. Last session, House Bill 3564 expanded the program to include certain types of forest lands. So we've seen a gradual expansion of the program over the years. Currently, we have about 32,000 acres statewide enrolled in the program. 14 counties are actively participating, and I believe we have around, 80 landowners statewide in the program. You're welcome.
All right. Any other questions? All right. I'm going to ask Mike Bersotti if he'll come back to the table. Mike, I'm from a district that is going to be very trusting of you. You're coming from the Department of Forestry. And the minute that I start telling them that this is about habitat and wildlife and they're going to bring biologists in and so forth, I'm going to get some type of emotional reaction there. And I believe you understand that. And I'm wondering, what would you say to representatives of areas like mine where the regulatory process has defined a certain attitude that might prevent them from being open to this, when actually the Farm Bureau is there, the Cattlemen's Association, you have been a mover and shaker in this putting together a consensus-building process. So how do we go about bringing more people to the level of thinking that this is a good thing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill has, of course, two components. One is the wildlife planning process, and the other one is the stewardship agreement. The wildlife planning process is designed for landowners who are managing for multiple resources and feel that, one, they want to focus on wildlife as their primary objective, or feel that they may lose their special assessments if they add that into the mix of things they're working on their property. In those cases where they feel they may lose their special assessment, the habitat planning program allows them to go there. The other program, the stewardship agreement program, is a concept that will allow a landowner to manage his land, work with whoever he's used to and most comfortably working with, but have access to other funds. For example, in the Willamette Valley, where we have ponderosa pine and Oregon white oak as two species that are somewhat endangered, a landowner could receive, well, actually, U.S. Fish and Wildlife is very interested in working with these landowners from a assistance rather than a regulatory ESA type of issue. We see the stewardship agreement program as allowing the state to develop a relationship with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the landowner, through a stewardship agreement, be able to maintain his relationship with his soil and water conservation district or his forester or his biologist, whoever he's comfortable working with, but have access to the resources, both financial and technical, of U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So we're not asking a landowner to develop a new relationship with a new federal partner, but he can have access to those resources through working with his local technical experts.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for those comments. Right. If there are no other questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3616, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3616. And is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Williams.
I'll move the Dash A4 amendments to House Bill 3616.
Representative Williams has moved the Dash A4 amendment to House Bill 3616. Is there any objection? Hearing none.
Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 3616 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 3616 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative
Barnhart? Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
Hass?
Aye.
Austin?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Aye.
House Bill 3616 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. All right. And if there's no other, Representative Fogg.
If you're asking for someone to carry it,
I need a carrier, and I'm going to ask Representative Dingfelder to carry the bill.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
thank
a great
you.
Idea.
All right. If there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
Not going to move the other bill?
We're not going to move the other bill?
We're not going to move the other bill?
Not today.
We're not going to.
Okay. That's it.